It's really, really nice to see everybody here. Very beautiful faces. And it was a wonderful talk that we had, two talks this afternoon. Rob's talk was totally awesome. And really, you know, I'm the information giver, but he was conveying love. I think I'd rather be him. But it was awesome. And that's the kind of feeling that I think we all would like Diamond Mountain to be like Rob. And Gyalse's talk, heart from the heart. And we would like our university to be like that. And I pray that it will always be like that. And it makes me feel like we've come a long way. Maybe without all the trouble we've had, we wouldn't have reached that. So the rest of us are trying to catch up, okay? So I just think it was awesome. And I thank you for that, especially. Feels like it's a success. So we just got back from a wild Europe tour, I think we did Paris, then Munich, then Hamburg, then Zurich, then Oslo, then Stockholm, and in some places we didn't spend more than 24 hours. We just went to the next place, and it was awesome. But I wanted to tell you a story, a very beautiful story. What was that? Before I left, I had to run to San Diego because my stepmother's having her 85th birthday. And she wanted me, you know, we all did a big party for her. And then I always go to the beach and stare at the waves and wish Alejandro was there to get me surfing. But we're working on it. And so I went to the beach. So instead of surfing, I had a coffee and, and some waffles, which I can never get. And I'm not hinting. I was sitting there having coffee and waffles, and there's this guy next to me who keeps looking at me, and then finally he says, Geshe Michael, you know, and I'm like, dang. You know, did I say anything that I shouldn't have? And then he's like, I really want to thank you for Diamond Mountain. It changed my life, you know. And I'm like, wow, this is in Del Mar, California, you know, in a coffee shop. And then I'm like, okay, well, you're welcome. And I'm working on something. Waffles here. Then he was kind enough not to pay me any more attention. And then we got on the plane to Paris, overnight flight from Phoenix, which is a miserable flight, but I had a pleasant flight due to someone getting me a bed on the plane, which allows me to function when I get there. And we got to Paris, and we had a group of, I think there were three of us on that flight. I think the team was five people in Paris, DCI team, but three of us were on the same flight, and then we, was it three or five? Four, five. Five people on the same flight. So we got to our hotel, and we didn't, you know, we were wiped out. It was in the morning now in Paris, but for us, we've been up for like 24 hours, and we got to the hotel, and they said, well, checkout's not till 11, and it's only 10 now. And we're like, so he's like, you sit down for an hour, you know. We sat down, and they said there's a big family in your room, and, you know, they're going to leave soon, you know. And we're like, yeah, okay. We were grumbling, and then we were trying to sleep. You know how you feel like you don't have any insides or something? And then this big family comes down, and these two parents and these two kids, and the kids are staring. One of the kids is staring at me, and I'm like, what's, and then she pulls on her father's arm, you know, and they're like, oh, the fuck is slow. I'm like, oh man, they're Israelis, you know. And then they're like, You're Geshe Michael. We're students of Dvora in Tel Aviv. We're from Tel Aviv, and we're students of Dvora. And thank you so much. And then they bothered us for like an hour. And we had to look peppy and happy. And then I said, well, you know, how's it going in Israel? And they said, well, we're up to 45. And I said, you know, 45 what? And they said, 45 DCI groups in Israel. There's 45 different DCI groups in Israel. And they are building a diamond mountain there. They finished the temple, a little bit larger than ours, in an oasis in the Arava desert, in the southern desert of Israel. They've built, the temple's finished, Lama Dvor's house is finished. And they're going for it. And they are very inspired by Diamond Mountain. And they were like crying and thanking me. It was really awesome. Then the next night or two nights later, we went to an art gallery in the middle of Paris. And it was a intimate talk to like, I don't know, how many, 60 people, 70 people, Parisians. And, you know, we gave the talk and we had a nice time. Nowadays we do jazz and talk. We kind of mix them up sometimes. And it was really fun. And we had a really good time. And they were very, very warm and very excited. And then afterwards, these two ladies come up to me, you know, and they're like, oh, Geshe Michael. And I'm like, yeah, you know, and they said, I said, where are you from? You know, you don't look Parisian. They said, we're from Argentina. You know, and I said, well, what are you doing here? You know, and they said, we were visiting Paris this week and on a vacation. And we were walking through this, I think it's the Marais area. We were walking through the area of Paris and there was a lady on the street corner and she looked a little bit lost. And being Buddhists, we thought we should help her, you know. So we paused our sightseeing and we said, can we help you? And she had this paper in her hand and she was like, I gotta find this art gallery within 10 minutes. You know, and they're like, why? And she says, there's this Buddhist monk talking, this gussy guy. And they're like, oh, Geshe Michael. And they're like, yeah. And she's like, yeah. And they said, oh, and they helped her find the talk. And then she got them into the talk. And they're students of Corolla in Argentina. They're ACI students. So they are grandchildren, you know. And they're here they are in Paris in the talk. From Argentina, just because they stopped to help somebody, you know. And then we did the whole thing, and we came home, and then I thought, I need a break from all this, you know. And I said, I'm going to take a walk in Oak Creek Canyon. You ever been there? There's a bridge, steel bridge. It's, like, really scary. It's, like, 300 feet high. And there's a secret path down that, very cool and dangerous. But so I'm like, I want to go down that path, you know, but I have to go to New Frontiers to get a sandwich first to take with me, you know, to feed the ducks. And I'm there and it's getting dark and I'm like, I need the sandwich quick. And this guy shows up. He's like, you got to give him the sandwich quick. This is Geshe Michael, you know? And I'm like, who are you? And he said, oh, I used to come to Diamond Mountain, you know, and it means so much to me. And I don't know this guy. I don't remember this guy. Anyway, the point is that Diamond Mountain is affecting the world. People all over the world that happens pretty frequently now, that people will say, thank you for Diamond Mountain. All over the world, wherever we go, people will say, my teacher's from Diamond Mountain, or I came from Diamond Mountain. Last month in New York, February, there was a book release and there was a celebration of the 25th anniversary of SIP. This is the project to input the Buddhist books that are left in the world. And the director's here, the former director's over here, the current director's over here. And under his stewardship, you'll be happy to know, recently, they completed every Buddhist book that survived from India. It took 25 years. 25 years. So it's 4,600 books, almost exactly. It's 500,000 pages, 500,000 pages. And the refugees typed them in, and they paid the refugees, and they typed them in. So we were celebrating that in New York, 25th anniversary. It was also the 20th anniversary of ACI, and my 30th anniversary of being a monkey. And we had a really good time. So I want you to try to see the flow or where Diamond Mountain fits into the grand plan in my mind. And I think sometimes when you're here, you don't feel it. And I think, especially if you're new to Diamond Mountain or you've never come here before, it just looks like a bunch of weird people out in the desert. And, you know, I can imagine if I just came here and walked in here and looked around, I'd think, oh, this is a bunch of, this is a weirdos, you know. And what are they doing here, you know? But really, there's a grand plan. There's a bigger plan. And it has a certain flow to it. And I want you to appreciate the flow. So first, we must locate and preserve what's left of the great wisdom of India and Tibet, okay? It was wiped out in India 1,000 years ago. It was wiped out in Tibet in 1959. And we have scoured the world. I mean, he just got back from a scouring world trip. And we've scoured the world for the last remaining copies of those books. Scott Norit just got... They were just in the library in St. Petersburg. 14,000... sorry... We completed over a 14-year period. We just completed, 2 years ago, we completed 141,000 titles, which is probably the largest surviving collection of Tibetan works. And it took 14 years. And they are working on the next step. That was to catalog them. Now they're working on the scanning, which would probably take, I don't know, 50 years. The whole project is projected to take another 150 years. At this, we planned it out for 150 years because we still have to do the Tibetan works. There are about 200,000 Tibetan scriptures. So the idea is first find the wisdom, learn it from authentic sources. Rebecca's project has raised now $100,000 only through the sales of sun-baked chips and chocolate chip cookies, okay, just from bake sales. They've raised $100,000 in the last 8 years, I think, 7 or 8 years, and have sent a good number of people to study, young people to study at the Sarah Monastery. So that's the idea. You raise funds, you sell cookies, you send young people to the monastery, you make sure that the books are preserved. They learn how to read the books. And then you translate them, you start translating them. There have been at Diamond Mountain and in ACI New York, 20,000 pages have been translated over the last 20 years. Okay, so, and that's the basic Geshe course has been translated by this group of people. These people have translated the classics of Tibet and India, and made them available in English, and trained people. So we started training people, I think, 20 years ago. And we counted up the number of teachers, past and present ACI teachers. There's 303. 58% of them are women in many countries of the world. I think about 35 countries of the world. And no woman has ever been taught the Geshe program before. And now they're teaching it. So I think this place is an institution which is changing the world. We go out and do the... Then the idea is that once you've trained teachers in the classics, in the real details of the great wisdom of ancient times, can you bring it to the modern world? You know, can you present it to the modern world in a way which changes their work life and their family life, their normal life? Can these obscure ancient texts be presented to modern day people in a way that would change their lives and make their lives more happy and successful. And in time, bring world peace or something like that. Is it possible that you can convey this information in a way that will be useful for modern people? So we worked on DCI. There have been some books put out. The Diamond Cutter book, after 14 years, is still in the top 0.1% of Amazon books. Okay, it's 6,000 out of 6 million books. And other books, How Yoga Works, are higher than that. And people are, it's changing people. There's a new book out called Karma of Love, which is a relationship book based on karma. It has the dubious distinction. We got an email from our Munich team. It is now the highest ranking intimacy book in Germany. on Amazon, German Amazon. It hasn't come out yet. They can't buy it yet. It's based on 500 copies that got out and got ran away. But the main shipment, I think, is coming this week or something like that. We hope so. Yeah. But from India, we published them in India. But it's being published on the Taiwanese translation is being done now. The mainland Chinese translation is being done now. The Russian, the German, the Spanish in Mexico are all coming out simultaneously. So I think that the flow that we hope to achieve is preserve the ancient wisdom, translate it, teach it to living teachers, which is Diamond Mountain's position in the flow. Make sure those teachers have the deeper wisdom and integrity that's required to teach those things. So that's the idea of the retreat, that in the crucible of a three-year retreat, and often the temperature is similar, you have probably, I believe it's the largest group of people in retreat, definitely in three-year retreat in the Western world. And with 3 years under their belt, when they come out, they can help the world. We believe that, and that's why this place exists. So we are not just a bunch of hippies, maybe ex-hippies, bald hippies, living in the desert. I mean, there's a very specific goal which has been in motion for 20 or 25 years and will continue for many years. And I think that when this crop is harvested, it'll be awesome. We have DCI teachers now all over the world. Venerable Ningbo and Bonnie are in Novosibirsk, which is the capital of Siberia, and also the Silicon Valley of Russia. And right as we speak, they are giving programs in Novosibirsk to large banking and petroleum corporation with 32,000 employees who we are training. They're all required to read the Diamond Cutter by the owner of the company in Russian. And Scott Norit just got back from a major tour of that company in Russia, and going back soon. And there are many teams, DCI teams, wandering around the world doing these things. And so I think, in my mind, we look forward to sort of supercharged teachers who have a three-year retreat under their belt. I think we have to really, the board of DM, we're going to start with a meeting on Sunday, I think, but we have to think about how to decompress you and then put you into service without making you cuckoo. And we'll work on that. We have plans for you. Who wants to? Anybody who wants to go to Novosibirsk? Because we need someone to go in the winter. since you've been so hot so long. We just got back from Harbin, which you don't know. You never heard of this place. It's on the Siberian border in China. And this is where Russia and Chinese culture meet. And Christine, who was that? Anyway, we had a team of, I don't know, Bonnie and a lot of people were there. Singapore team. We are now exporting teachers from other countries to other countries. The Singapore team went to Harbin. We refused to come out of the hotel, even to eat, because they said they're afraid their eyeballs were going to freeze. And we had to take them pizza back to the hotel. And but it's all over the world. It's everywhere. And Christine Walsh is scheduled to give a talk to the 800 psychologists chosen by the Communist Party of China in June, I think. And like that, it's just amazing. Things are happening. Wonderful things are happening all over the world. Alejandro's group had, in the last two programs, almost 2,000 people came. 1,000 the first time, and I think last time we tried a theater piece with Dharma teaching inside. That's kind of cool. 800 people came to that. And many, we had an international congress, a retreat. All the people came from all over the world. Big group from Beijing and Shanghai, Hong Kong. Big group from Bulgaria. A group from France. People from France, Germany, Israel, other places. And the Guadalajara team, Ayrton is one of them, put on, I think it was the best retreat we've ever done. I think it's the best program we've ever done. And it was 160 people from all over the world who are working on this, trying to change the world. And it was the most awesome program we ever had. And you should thank everyone when you go home. But it was, I think, the most outstanding program we've ever had. And to see the Beijing team doing flamenco and singing Chinese songs to everyone, all the Mexican people. It was awesome. And big Mexican guys swinging around little Chinese ladies and, at Ningbo's birthday party. With marimba, what do you call that? Marimba, marimba band. Anyway. So things are happening. So then what happens after that? As Scott said this morning to those of you who came to the meditation, the company in Russia, for example, with 32,000 employees, they are now using Diamond Cutter principles to run the company, okay? Which is one of the largest banking chains in Russia and petroleum companies in the world. So they're supplying a lot of the energy to the world and also doing a lot of the banking, finance, economy for the Russian economy. Those directors have all been trained now in Diamond Cutter principles. They are intent on serving other people in order to help their company, you know, and that's their philosophy. Their philosophy is shifting in their company. And so that whole flow from, you know, saving books in the refugee camps up to having a large petroleum corporation like Exxon running their business by the principles of serving others is awesome. And it's and Diamond Mountain is an important component of that flow. So I want you to the theme in the scripture, which we're going to be studying for the next 10 days, 3 days here, 7 days in Phoenix, is appreciating yourself and appreciating your life. And I think all of you have, I mean, my observation from meeting, I think last year 10,000 people came to programs, but my observation from talking to many of them is that we have trouble appreciating ourselves. You know, like we're all doing some miraculous thing. I believe it's some very miraculous thing. And we are rotting, wreaking massive changes in the world. We are. We really are. And if you can go to a coffee shop in Del Mar and then be in a hotel in Paris and then meet some Argentinians, you know, within a week, and they're all like, you know, this changed my life, then something's happening, and it's wonderful. It's very, very beautiful. And to me, it's a dream come true. And I think you don't each of you doesn't understand what's happening. You don't see it because you're not on the airplane all the time. We live on airplanes. It's awesome. It's tremendous. And what's happening here in your retreat and inside your minds isn't happening anywhere else in the United States that I know of. And it's awesome. We are becoming increasingly electrified. You know, I have a major problem when I come to Diamond Mountain. It's not working. And I feel truly distressed sometimes. Like I hold it at night and I'm like, do something, you know. And, you know, and it's like my Lama said, they've observed people, whole families now, who live in a 12-inch screen. Their whole experience of life is limited to 12 by 8 inches. Most of the day, they don't look around them. They don't see other people. We were in China. We were sitting in a coffee shop in Shanghai. I was with my Chinese language teacher, whose job is hopeless. And I tell you frankly, I think it's too old. But we were sitting there, and there were four Chinese girls, like, I don't know, teenagers, older teenagers, 18, 19. They're sitting around a table together. We had a two-hour Chinese lesson. They didn't speak to each other once. They were all on their, they're all like on the cell phone, you know, and they're like this, you know. And finally, I just couldn't stand it, you know, and we got up to leave, and they were still going. And I asked Liang, my teacher, I said, Xia Liang, I said, can you ask them, you know, don't they ever talk to each other, you know? You know, I don't want to offend them, but I'm just curious, you know. And they were like this, and she tried to talk to them, and finally they're like, yeah, what do you want, you know? And she said, you know, he wants to know, do you ever talk to each other? And they said, well, we're texting each other right now. they couldn't speak to each other. They were sitting around the same table texting each other because they couldn't speak to each other, you know, and they live in this little box. This one's much smaller. And their whole life is inside the box, you know. It's restricted to this little box. And they're missing the whole coffee shop and the American guy and everything, you know. And it's sad, and it's everywhere. It's the same everywhere. So I believe it will be recognized as a major psychological challenge in the coming generation. You know, people will be very, very stunted. And then somebody will figure it out, and it'll get into the newspapers, and, you know, and they'll say, maybe we should take children out to see trees and stuff that aren't pictures on their iPad, you know. And I believe that we've had experience in corporate trainings. We take away their iPhones. And, you know, when we do retreats up in Prescott or Guadalajara, we take away their iPhones, we take away their iPads, we take away their computers for 10 days. And they like kiss our feet at the end. You know, except the one that we lost her laptop. she found it at home later. She swore she gave it to us. Anyway, I won't mention that. But it's like three more gray hairs. So anyway, I believe that in the coming decades, people in the modern world will begin to seek out opportunities for silence and solitude. And then I do believe that, like, we were in Shanghai, and there's a factory district in the middle of the city near, what's the airport name? Pudong? It's near Pudong Airport. Not so close to the city, but there's a big factory area, and a team of volunteers has refixed it up, and they're using it as a center for anyone in the city to drop by and meditate anytime they want, and arrange flowers and have a tea ceremony. And they don't have to be a member, and they don't have to pay anything, It's just because they figured out it would make the city more sane if they had these little islands where people could go and be quiet and away from their machines for a while. And I think it will be I think even in Guadalajara and stuff, we have to be ready for that, and we have to provide those things to other people. And you are like the people who will help those people. You will help build those places, and there will be little islands of sanity without the mechanical masters. And it will be important for the mental health of people in the modern world. And we have to be ready for that. We have to be well trained. We have to go through our own periods of retreat. You can't teach anything unless, you've done it yourself. So we have to be examples for those people. We have to say, yeah, I did solitude. I do a month, or I did 6 months, or I do a month every year, or I did a 3-year retreat like that. And people need it, and they will. And we have to get ready for them. The world doesn't always see what they need in time. And we're working very hard on solar. That's why Ayrton's here. We're working very hard on solar energy. You'll be interested to know one of our... the organizer in Munich, which is in Bavaria, southern Germany, he owns a software company. And they are doing a lot of the software for Bavarian Motor, BMW, Werken. They do a lot of the software for BMW. Two of their recent projects, we're driving in his car to the talk. 300 people came to that talk in Munich, the first night we ever been there, and he stops at the red light and his car stalls out. And then he just slams on the gas when the green light comes on. And then he reaches the next red light and he stops and the car stalls out. And it's weird because the car is silent at the red light. And we're like, do you have a car that works, And he says, well, my electric car's too small for everybody. All electric car, and then we say, well, what's wrong with the engine? And he says, we designed it that way. It saves 10% of the gas. The engine stops at a red light. It turns itself off. And then when you press the accelerator, it starts up again, and there's no delay. And they helped make the software. And then they did the software for, they fit, 10,000 containers with electrical outlets so that the electric cars will arrive in America from BMW charged up during the boat trip. So they did all the software for that. So our cabins here are totally solar and all compost. And before the end of our lives, everyone will live that way. Okay? One of our main organizers in Taiwan is Jeffrey Tso, whom some of you may know. By the way, I asked him recently, we were in the car, I said, Jeffrey, Tso is not a normal last name in Chinese. What does Tso mean? He says, I don't know. My ancestor said it means the one of the left hand. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. He's a manager for much of DuPont's operations in Asia. He's a very high manager. He runs all the HR for DuPont in large areas of Asia. So I'm like, so you work for DuPont? Yeah. He says, yeah. I said, well, what's your favorite product? He said, titanium oxide. I said, what's that? He says, you need it for paint. And if you keep it at the wrong temperature, it blows up the city. And I'm like, that's interesting. Then I said, by the way, when is the petroleum going to run out? He said, 37.5 years, all petroleum. That's DuPont's internal calculation, And then the only place you'll be able to cook your food or have a light is at Diamond Mountain. No, I mean, get it, okay? These are not a bunch of hippies hanging out somewhere. They are ahead of everybody. I think so, I believe that. We have a student in Austria who's working on... So Germany cut back their subsidies for solar. They have stopped the government has stopped most of their subsidies for solar. It was the most generous subsidy in the world. And suddenly they stopped. And I asked Holger, I said, why, you know, what's going on? He said, we don't need more. We can't use more. It's maxed out. They have all the solar energy they can use in Germany, you know. And then the Austrians are working on what to do at night. You know, so they're working on two things, new batteries and pumping water into huge reservoirs during the day with the excess solar energy and then releasing it through turbines at night. And in this way, the solar energy will supply electricity for cities at night. And that's some of our students are working on that. So I think meditation and an ethical lifestyle and understanding where the world comes from, reality, it tends to create a clearer state of mind, in my opinion. And we have a serious pockets of clear thinkers being produced by this university. And of course, they look weird to people who don't realize the oil's going to run out, you know, or don't think about it. They look crazy to those people who maybe are, I think they're crazy. They're not doing anything, and it's too late. It's already too late. There will be major social problems. There will be social. There will be violence. There will be wars. There will be starvation. No roads. No packaging. No asphalt. No fuel for ships. It's crazy. Everything. Everyone else is crazy. You guys are the only sane ones. You're ready. And Holger and those guys. So I look at this university and I see something totally different than what other people might see. And I congratulate you. And I think you're awesome. And I think you are just like shining, a shining light in the world. And I think this place is awesome. And I think what's being taught here is extraordinary. And I think it's changing the world. And don't let people talk you into that not being the case. Appreciate who you are and what you're doing. I wrote a letter. I got irritated at one of our major teachers. I said, quit hanging your head down like a dog. I got pissed off. And I'm like, you guys are amazing. You are the hope for the future of this world, in my opinion. You're not a bunch of wacky people. The world needs you. You're a little bit ahead. And especially with the viewpoints of where things come from, right? That your reality is shaped by how well you take care of other people. All things are possible if we take care of other people in very ultimate and serious ways. Then there are no physical limitations or political limitations to what this world can be. If you have that worldview, then you can make a perfect world. It's possible. Because the world is coming from seeds in your mind, which you plant by how well you take care of other people. And that philosophy will spread. And then people, because it makes you successful. And then people will naturally, people aren't stupid if they see something that works. Like nobody uses, I was thinking about, there's things that have dropped out of being, like a washing tub, what do you call those things? You wash your clothes with a wringer thing and then you throw them on a rock and bang them on a rock. There's no such, you can't buy them at Walmart, okay, except these guys. No, washing machines work, and nobody's interested. You don't go to Walmart, and they don't sell buckets with squeezy things in them like they were 100 years ago, because nobody wants them, because they have something that works better. And I believe that this worldview is proving to be that way, because it's irresistible. You get what you want, whether you want a partner, or you want financial success, or you want inner peace, or you want world peace. This viewpoint that you plant seeds in your mind by how well you care for others and that creates your reality is irresistible. I've had countless Russians tell me, they're like this, the first morning, Scott was talking about this morning, the company makes them go to the training, so they're all like, you know, the first morning they're all like that, you know, and you talk to them and you're like, hi, and they're like, you know, and then the second day they loosen up a bit, and the third day they're crying and they're asking to send you emails, and they are, and then that branch of the company is running by worldview within a few weeks, and because it's like a washing machine and it works better, you know, not because it's a certain religion or, you know, we're right and you're wrong. I don't care if they ever know it was Buddhism before. I don't care. You know, think how terrible it would be if there were Geshe Michael pictures all over. You know, I mean, who cares if they even know where it came from? You know, who cares? I think people should stick to whatever religion they grew up with. The cathedrals in, where were we? Downtown. The first place we had, not Tequila. We did a retreat in Tequila. What was the place before that? The little town. Masamitla. So Masamitla has a beautiful cathedral. So let it be a cathedral. You know, you're not going to put Chakrasambhara up on the altar. Jesus looks very good there. And let people be what they grew up with. That's fine. It doesn't matter. As long as their life is run by a philosophy which says, I must care for others if I want to be happy. You know, then who cares if anyone knows what it used to be? When we do the programs in Russia, we don't, in China, forget it. I go in a suit, right? I go in a suit. By the way, it's a $75 suit bought in Vietnam on the sidewalk, regardless of what you heard. And they forgot to finish one pant leg, which I can prove on photos. So anyway, let's get on to the class. What I'm trying to say is that this university, the staff of the university, the board, the volunteers, and the retreatants are incredibly precious and awesome. And in the whole world, there's nobody like you. And you are priceless. In my opinion, you are priceless. You can look at a pen, right? You got a pen? Do I have a pen? You can look at a pen, right? This is the most famous teaching of this university, if I may say so. Right? And a dog will see a chew toy. A dog will only want to chew it. A human will write with it. They will want to ride a ladder or something. Okay? And what does a bodhisattva see? They see like an instrument for changing the entire world. I could write things with this that would bring peace to the entire world. They see something totally different, right? Is the dog wrong? Not for a dog. Is the human wrong? No, not for a human. Is the bodhisattva cuckoo? Cuckoo hippie. You know? No, they're just seeing something different. And that's the emptiness of a pen, right? That's the emptiness of a pen. That's the higher reality of a pen. Can you get angry at the dog that they don't see a world-changing sword? You know, should you beat the dog? You know? No, I mean, they have to catch up. You know, that's all. So, anyway, I salute you, and it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to feel the feeling here, all the centers around the world. And I'm just really, what do you call it? Most of the day I'm ecstatic about what you're doing. And I'm just really, I cry a lot thinking about you and how happy I am about what you're doing and everybody here, you know? Anyway, that's how I perceive it. Okay, so we are continuing through a book. This is the Tibetan book. I used to hold it up here and open it and read it to impress people, but the computer works better. So usually I just hand it around and let people look at it. Because of Dan and John's work, we don't need it anymore. But it sure looks nice. So I'm going to hand it around. Take a look at the book. My Lama gave me this copy when I became a Geshe. And it's from Tibet. It's on handmade paper made from thorn bushes in Tibet. And it's a beautiful, I think it's the best book ever written. We were sitting around lunch, having lunch, and everybody was saying, what's the best book you ever read? And someone was like War and Peace, and somebody was like Jonathan Segal. And then I was like, no, Namdo Lakchang. It's got to be Namdo Lakchang. You know, this is the best book on this planet. And my Lama taught it to us for 30 years. And it's extraordinary. It's beautiful. It's a guidebook to enlightenment, from zero to enlightenment, okay? All the steps you need to get enlightened in this life are there. And they are there in the greatest, the most poetic and beautifully written Tibetan there ever was. And now Tibetan language is being lost in the world. I called a monastery in Tibet recently, Chone Monastery, to ask about some books. And there was no one who could speak Tibetan. There was one old monk who spoke rather poorly. So this is probably going to be it. This is the greatest book I think ever written in Tibetan. And it's extraordinary. So we made a deal, Mazal, that I will finish this book. I would like to pass on the transmission in my lifetime before I go somewhere. So I'd like to pass on this transmission, which my Lama granted me so kindly several times. And so you should get the transmission. To hear it on the web and to hear it from a living person is completely different. We don't believe in Buddhism that that's the same thing. We believe that something happens between two human beings who are alive when one of them gives a transmission of an ancient teaching. So I think if you don't come to these free classes for the next 12 years or so, you're just insane. And, you know, I don't go banging on doors in Tucson and telling people they're insane, but they are. You'll never get a chance like that. And no one, I mean, my teacher learned it from the author, right? So who was the teacher of the Dalai Lama's teacher? So it's awesome. And you've got to, I beg you to get the whole transmission, and I beg you not to miss a class, and I beg you to pass it on as a living being, okay? So I can't do anything more than that. I'll keep my side of the deal as long as I can, you know. But you gotta learn it, and you gotta pass it on. It cannot be lost in this world. It must be passed on, okay, as much as you can. As much as you can come here physically, do, okay? If you don't, it's just crazy. I don't know. It's like somebody's handing out money for free and you're going to work every day. You know, it's like, I don't know. I don't understand. Okay. All right, here we go. So we're in a section of the text where we're learning how to meditate, and meditating properly is a lot like running in the Olympics. I didn't see the Olympics except in the local sports bar, which is the only place you can get any food in my town. And they have 83 TVs going up on the top of the walls. All different programs, different channels. But anyway, I saw most of the Olympics there, and by accident, because I was eating there, having meetings there. And it's amazing to think that someone would train for their whole life and then it's all over in about 2 minutes. Like a runner, right? I know a runner, an Olympic runner. She got up to a silver medal. She trained for 25 years, you know, and every day, you know, like 5 hours, 6 hours. My friend is their masseuse. They need 2 hours of masseusing every day. Just to so their huge muscles don't freak out, and then the race is over in 2 minutes, right? Of their life, it's over in 2 minutes. But just before the race, you can see them warming up, And they have this really ritual warm-up. You know, they got to warm up. And, you know, their trainers spend years teaching them to warm up properly. It's hopeless to run a race with all those chunky muscles if you don't warm up first. Meditation is the same, okay? You got to have a proper warm-up for meditation. A lot of people don't know why their meditation isn't better. It's because they don't know the warm-up, how to warm up before meditation. So we're in a section of the text where they teach you how to do the warm-up. There's two things you have to know. I'm going to allow, if you don't have to, but if you want to, I'm going to say Tibetan words. You can repeat them. You don't have to. If you prefer not to, that's fine. You guys have to repeat them. Say Georgia, Truk. Georgia, Truk. Okay. Georgia means preliminary practices to a meditation session. Truk means six. So there are six practices. By the way, I'll take a break, and I know I talk too much, and that's not unusual. We'll take a break in about 10 minutes. I'll give you a break in about 10 minutes, and then we'll do some more. I just want to catch you up to where we are. We are on the Georgia Druk. We are going through the six preparations for any meditation session. First one is called Nekang Chi Dorje La Kusun Tu Giten Dhamba. It means tidy up your meditation space and prepare an altar. Okay, that's considered the first meditation practice. Tidy up your space and put out, it doesn't matter, a picture of whoever you care about, Jesus or Moses or Muhammad or Buddha or, I can't think, I don't know any modern sports stars. John, no, that's too old. Wilt Chamberlain, that's why. So, no, I'm not going to make it. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Someone who you respect, someone who you would like to learn from, put their picture on the altar. Put some little nice thing that's important for you there. You know, like fruit or cookie or Twinkie or water. There's bad news about Twinkies. I'll tell you guys later. Major problem. Big karmic obstacle. But anyway... So put out a nice altar, okay? It's not a hippie, stupid thing to do. It's a very intelligent, advanced thing to do. You are extremely intelligent if you have a little homemade altar there. And I don't care what anybody else says. They are crazy. They will live and die with no meaning to their life. It's good to put an altar out. And it's good to put a picture there of somebody who's uplifting to you. And then to put a nice little fruit there or something. That's a good thing. Okay. Okay, number two. Nipa chipa yo meching kupa zepa samba. Shamba. Second step, put out some offerings to that being who you respect and you love. Then put a little piece of fruit or put out some water bowls or something. Change it every day if you can. Okay. Yo man means the offerings should have been acquired honestly and purely, okay? Nothing stolen or on a credit card. No, we won't talk about that. Kopadzepa means make them pretty, make them beautiful, make them lovely. They can be small and modest, but they should be exquisite. And simple things can be exquisite, and expensive things can be ugly, right? Depends on your state of concentration at the time. Okay, number three. Sumba ten devala lu namnangi chudun dendu kud de gesem kepa chengi ngang ne kyamsem sok chawa. Thirdly, sit down on your meditation cushion in the proper posture. There are seven or eight elements to that posture. You all know that. We went through that. Basically just means sit up straight and suck in your tummy a little bit. And then put your mind through some kind of virtuous thoughts, like, I'm doing this to help everyone in the world. Okay, I'm doing this to help everyone in the world. Is it possible to help everyone in the world? I think when I first became a Buddhist, or I first started following Buddhism, they would talk about helping all the living beings in the world. And frankly, I would think that's not possible. or I don't have that capacity. But there's the thing of a living example, you see? If you become an example of what you talk about, if you truly have compassion or you personally have kindness, like I think we saw it demonstrated in Rob's talk, personally, I saw it that way. If you have that kind of heart, people will be attracted to it and people will emulate it and it will spread like a virus, okay? You can know all the ACI courses and Sanskrit and Chinese and Tibetan and still have a cold heart. And that doesn't spread. Thank goodness. People love warm hearts. People imitate kind people. And then that spreads. And in that manner, you change the world. Without question, okay? People come and say, what are you doing? You know, we are on airplanes often, and the stewardesses will sit down next to us and say, who are you guys? What are you doing? You know, can I, you know, everybody wants to join DCI after like 15 minutes. It's just because it feels happy, okay? That's all. So you can save the world by becoming a kind person, right? Because that will spread. That always spreads. Okay, number three. Four, Shipa, Soksing Selmdepa. Picture all the holy beings of the universe sitting in front of you. If it's too much to do all of them, do one. Okay, I prefer one personally. Somebody asked me today, one of the retreat, and said, you know, how many, do you do the 64 angel thing or do you do the 37 thing? And I'm like, I do the one. And I always, and the older I get, the less it gets, you know. and I'm proud of it. So anyway, picture in front of you a living holy teacher. Whoever you relate to, picture them in front of you. That's step number four. Step number five is called Sakjang. Say Sakjang. Sakjang. Sak means a quick injection of good karma just before you meditate. And Jang means a quick cleansing of negative karma just before you meditate. Why just before? Because you'll make more bad karma if you take 15 minutes. Like you got to do it Sakjang fast and then start meditating. You see? So Sak means an extraordinary practice to collect a big hit of good karma just before you meditate. It's like, what's those things that they take just before the Olympic race? Steroids. Like they take a drug and then they run, you know, and they can run twice as fast as everybody. In our system, it's legal. Sakjang. Get a big hit of good karma. Clean some bad karma. Start meditating fast. That's called Sakjang, okay? Sakjang is done traditionally by seven steps. So don't get confused between the six and the seven, okay? There are six general practices for preparing for a meditation session. The fifth one has seven parts, and that's called Yenlak Dun. Say Yenlak Dun. If you keep repeating Tibetan, you get to have your break within the next 5 minutes. Okay, the first one of those is called Chakselwa. Chakselwa means bow down to your teacher. It doesn't mean physically bowing down. I got complaints. I was in New York. This lady reporter runs in. Why are all these people bowing down? We're Buddhist. People bow down in Buddhism. It's a custom, you know. In the church, you kneel. In Buddhism, you get down on the ground, okay? In Japan, you go like that, you know? It's a custom. It's a cultural custom. And it's what we do, okay? So first one is prostration. You don't have to do it physically, okay? And in fact, in this case, you are doing it mentally. Why? Because you're on your meditation seat. You shouldn't get back up because you're going to mess up. Okay, so the essence of prostration is to admire something in the person you consider your teacher, okay? So, you know, if you want to learn piano, you don't go to a banjo teacher because they don't teach piano. You go to a teacher because they have something that you want to learn. And so hopefully, you shouldn't take a teacher unless they have something you want to learn from them. If they're a good banjo player, but they don't play piano, and you want to learn piano, you should find a different teacher. And everyone's different. Everybody relates to a different teacher. There are many fine teachers in our broad umbrella organization, ACI, etc., people who have been trained here. There are many, many fine teachers, good teachers. They are all different personalities. Alejandro and me are different. He surfs better. But each one has their own special flavor and their own special style. Find one who fits you, and because they have something that you want to learn. And then when you think in your mind, you're nice, I want you to teach me, it's because there's something about that person that you want to learn. So in the first of the 7 steps to collect a good hit, a fast hit of good karma and clean out bad karma, you're supposed to think about the quality of your teacher that you want to learn. Oh, you play piano so well. That's a prostration. That's a mental prostration. Okay, you don't have to get down on the ground. And if you get down on the ground and you don't have the mental prostration, it doesn't work anyway. Okay? If you do the mental one, you don't have to do the physical one. If you do both, it's better. It's even better. Okay? So that's fine. So prostration is a mental thing, and it's an admiration of a quality that you would like to learn. Step number 2, offering. Okay? Repeated. But this time it's in your mind. Right? And you can go wild since you're not limited by your budget anymore, which for some of us is a challenge. I like to make nice offerings. I mean, if I go wild, it can, I don't know, Nicole shops for me. What was the last bill? What was that last one? Where are you, Vigna? What was the bill for the last trip to Sedona? $300? Okay. Hey, you should do some nice ones, you know. But this one you can do in your mind, okay? You can do in your mind. Offering. Third part is called confession. Okay, chaksa washing. Chaksa means prostration. Chupa means offering. And now we're on confession, which is shakpa. Okay, say shakpa. Shakpa. Shakpa is a word that means to split open a piece of wood with an axe. And it means to bare your heart and admit the things you've done that are not so good. And that's confession. Okay, so in Tibetan it's called splitting open the heart. You split open your rib cage and you say, look, I was jealous of somebody 15 minutes ago. You know, and you're showing everything. That's called shakpa. Okay, it's a beautiful word. All right, we are in the middle of shakpa. The essence of the practice of shakpa is topshi. Say topshi. What's topshi? 4 powers. Okay, the 4 powers of purification. Purifying what? Old bad karma. Old boo-boos. 4 powers for boo-boo purification is called topshi. We finished them already in Guadalajara. He's now going to go on a little bit about the 4th power. Okay, the 4 powers are tengitob, like you rethink out your understanding that the world is coming from you. Just rethink it out, the pen thing. Tengitob. Then nambasum jembetob. Just consider how fast the negative seed is going to multiply in your mind. According to the scriptures, it doubles every 24 hours. Ningbo did the math for me. He's not here because he's in Sibirsk, Novosibirsk, getting his rear end frozen off. But what was I think it's like a couple million in a month. Okay, you squish a bug on May 1st. By May 30th, it's equivalent to killing 1 million or 2 million, something like that. So the second of the 4 powers is to understand that and to get excited about getting that thing out now, not even waiting until tomorrow. I need to remove this seed now. It's some kind of feeling of urgency. I need to remove this seed now. Okay, step number 3. Nyepale lan dope top. You make a commitment not to do it anymore. Okay, you make a commitment not to do it anymore. That's the only thing that stops the bad karma, is a commitment not to do it again. Okay, that's the real power. If you can't remember four, just remember number three, you know? Okay? If it was lying and you were lying to people, then you make a commitment not to lie for a certain amount of time. Okay? I will watch my mouth very carefully for the next 3 days while we're in silence and try not to lie. You see what I mean? That's the real power that short circuits the karmic seed. You cannot remove the karmic seed, by the way. You can only short circuit it. And then, what's the last one? If you tell me that one, you can have a break. Yeah, good. What do they call that in Tibetan? It means do something to balance out the karma, okay? Do something to balance out the karma. I was involved in an abortion. That's my famous example. I was told by my immediate teachers and parents that abortion was okay. So I was involved in one in college. And then I went to study with Tibetans and they told me, you just killed a human being, you know? And I'm like, wow, I don't want that, you know? So then I said, they took me through the four steps, right? And then part of my reason to become a monk was step number three. If you don't have sex, you can't have an abortion again. But number four was balancing power, right? So then I worked with children. I think it was 15 years I worked with children. I had a children's group in New Jersey. And that was a balancing karma until I felt the karma was finished. And there are signs of that, which we went over already in Guadalajara, which are, you feel a great lightness in your heart and you have a small, exquisite disaster in your life because the power of the seed is released in a single day. So if you were supposed to get in a car accident and die because you were involved in an abortion, if you do a good four powers, then you'll just get... the Buddha in the Diamond Cutter Sutra, Jinkan Jing, says, well, you'll get a migraine for 24 hours, an intense migraine that you never had before. And then you're done. Then the power of the seed is wasted, is spent. And you will never have any other. Fourth chapter, Yoga Sutra, you'll never have to pay those debts back, right? It's finished, okay? So we are on the wrap-up of that. He's about to tell us more. He's going to give us a list of six things you can do to balance old bad karma, okay? Six things you can do to balance old bad karma. And that's where we're at. And we'll take a break of... we have to finish at 9:30. I don't want these guys to get overwhelmed because they're already going to have a lung headache for 6 months or something. Can we say 9:15 and then we'll do 15 more minutes? Okay, it's like 11-minute break. There's only one toilet over here. Let's see what happens. Let's see how bodhisattva they are. Okay. Let's say 11 minutes, and if anyone's still over there waiting, it's okay. All right. Okay. See you. Go quick. Then we'll come back at 9:15. And it's a prediction of that person's life. So good luck, Rebecca. You ready? Quick, here. No, you got just pick a. Yeah. No, you gotta do it. Oh, no, I'll do it. I better do it. Okay. All right. Here we go. This is a short quotation from Jetsun Kapa, a Gombarabsa, which is the greatest book ever written on emptiness, and it says, "Karma is where your karma stays." So we have a year to figure that out. Gunnar, you ready? Here we go. Okay. Even in this, the master gives us a lesson. If you really love your family, if you really want to help them, then leave and perfect your own heart first in deep retreat. I didn't set that up. Okay, that's the quotation that Rob was giving this afternoon. That's like a miracle. Nah. I didn't set it up, I swear. Okay. It's a sign. Okay, then. You can wait till they're finished, okay? Then you got some place to do it. All right. Nyambukundi Chupito. So we got just a few minutes, and we'll just get started. Mainly, there are six different practices suggested for power number four, for the purification of old bad karma, okay? The balancing power, right? Ngar chepala gyope gone, with sincere regret about what you did before. Musu dapa chepe top, here are some methods of directly cleaning that karma. Okay, number one, deshin shepe tsen means reciting the names of the Buddhas. Okay, this is a powerful practice which we have not done much. We've been concentrating on other forms which he'll mention, but I'm kind of into this one this week, so I thought we would go over that a lot. And this is called Yulkitop. Yulkitop means this purification method is powerful because of the person's name and not because of any intention from our side. So you can have a lousy, weak intention and it still works just because Buddhas are so powerful. To recite the names of, in this case, 35 beings plus 8 more, which I'll tell you about later, who have already done what we seek to do, is of extremely great power. Because of the power of them and not because of our goodness, right? Something good or something bad done towards an extraordinary person gives great results no matter what your intention was. You can have a good result. You have a good intention and hurt a spiritually advanced person, and you will have a terrible result, right? Or you can have a bad intention or a weak intention and say a Buddhist name over and over, and just the name will be enough, and you don't have to worry so much about, you know, repeating the bad deed in your mind as you're doing the purification, which is what I do. Okay. Got that? All right. Musa Dakpa Chibita. Second one, Sungaktang. Saying special mantras like Vajrasattva mantras, which you've heard about. Dodang, reciting sutras, reciting great, like Heart Sutra or Diamond Cutter Sutra. Xinjing, Jinkanjing, okay. Tongyi, this is the preferred method at Diamond Mountain because you are highly trained, and Jetsun Kaba himself says this is the highest one of the six. He mentions the six, he goes through the six, and then he says, if you are Noa, it means if you are a practitioner of high capacity, then meditate on emptiness. Meditate on the emptiness of the pen. And that things are, what Gyalse talked about, what Venerable Gyalse talked about today. Just do those meditations and dedicate it to purifying your negative karma. And that's the highest. But only special people can do that if they've been trained and if they have a good capacity, good mental and spiritual capacity. Right? Number five, make offerings. Number six says kusugla temba. Kusugla temba means to rely on an image. And I was kind of going to fudge that one because I wasn't sure what it meant. But then during the 10-minute break, I thought, maybe I shouldn't fudge it. And I'll go look it up. And I wanted to thank Ted Lemon. He's our resident programmer. He has refined the tools for using the 500,000 pages that have been input for 25 years. I can check all the sutras that ever existed in India in 10 seconds and look that up. And I did. Okay? So you got to realize that's something else that's coming out of this university. The work being done here and by the people from here is unmatched in the world in that sense. Those tools for using those, that research, being able to look up Kusula Tema. So you want to know what it means? It means out of admiration for the Buddha or any other holy being of your choice, you sculpt or paint or draw them. Okay? You make an image of them. Okay? Doesn't Lama Sopa really into having his students do sasa? That's a good thing. Okay. All right, last one. Oh, that is six. Okay. Sorry. I just don't want to keep you late.
I know these guys are going to be totally burned out tonight. And I've been there. I know how hard it is. You'd be fried. Okay. Deitsan Mase. Not only that, Tulo Shakso Shepe Tsik Musa Majukyang Dikpa Dape Chudu. So there's a famous confession. All Buddhist monks, twice a month, we get together and do sojong. And then you do a thing called Tungshak, which means you confess mistakes. In the old days, the monks would sit around in a circle and they would actually say what they did. You know, I checked out a lady in the bus station on Thursday, you know, or something like that. They would admit it to each other openly. And there was a high degree of, what do you call that? When you don't spill the secrets of your small group. You respect the integrity, or what do you call that? There's another word for that. People trusted each other that they could say the terrible things they did and thought to the other members of their sangha because they knew that it would be kept what do you call it? Confidential? No. Discreet. Yeah. I mean, so in the old days, in sanghas, it was considered very important that you would share with each other your worst thoughts, your worst deeds, the blackness of your heart. And then you would all keep it carefully and respectfully, just out of honor for the system. And then the system broke down at some point, I think. And now in the monastery, you just have, in my monastery, Sarah, we do sojong together, Sarah J, Sarah May. That's about the only thing we do together. We do sojong together, and it's and then you go home, you know, and it means I openly share what I did wrong. I openly confess. If I share it with my brothers and sisters openly, I will feel at peace. And if I don't, I won't. You know? But then they don't share it anymore. So anyway, I think it's a good custom. Anyway, he says, with step number four, you don't have to say, Tulo Shakso, I open my heart, I confess everything. You don't have to go through that. Shepi Tsuk Musa Majokyang, even if you don't go through the recitation of it, Digpa Dakpe Chirdu, if you undertake certain actions to purify your heart, which include Mani Changwa, just saying Om Mani Padme Huns on your rosary, Mani Changwa. Tsun, starting with that kind of little tiny thing you can do, up to greater virtues, much higher virtues. Che Kyang, Nyambo Kundu Chupe Topsu Joa, it can be number four. It can be number four. Every effort you make in your spiritual practice all day, everything, washing dishes quickly so you can get back to your meditation, or, you know, making a fence to keep the pigs out of your kale crop. Those are cute fences I saw today. All those things, every little, he says, Rangchak Drakyang Tabu, even like meditators, hermits, people who live on their own in solitude, Tabu, Chuda La Droid say, even if they go to the debate ground, when it's too hot or when it's too cold, you should grab that discomfort and use it for power number four. Okay? So all sweat, every difficult thing that you do in your whole day, which you guys do hundreds of, every one can be power number four. Which I really like that. So really now there's seven, right? There's the six traditional ones. I forget who taught them.
I'll tell you tomorrow. But the seventh one, which is available all the time, even to CTs, for example, is every trouble you've gone through in the last year, every single little hardship you've gone through, you can grab onto that and use it. You can get mileage out of it. It can be power number four. So if it comes up in your mind, just say, yeah, I dedicate that for power number four. I dedicate that hardship I had to purifying mistakes I made earlier in my life. Okay? Cool? Anything you do for your practice, you can use for power number four. And you just think of anything, even hard times, especially hard times. He's saying especially hard times. And dedicate it to purifying old bad karmic seeds. Okay? Kache means katup, which is tapas, right? Difficult. Katup means difficult practices, like sitting in a little retreat hut when it's 110 outside. We always have record hot spells when you guys are in retreat. Okay. Kache chepe kun kyam dikpe dakpe che tu samna. If you dedicate it to purifying your old bad karmic seeds, it will work. You can use it. Dakpa gyuro. Dakpa gyuro means they will be purified. I got two more minutes and I'm not wasting it. Okay, here we go. Deyan topshi tsangwar chega. But you must have all four powers complete. You can't leave one out. All four have to be there. Kongi drupa nangne. Of the six which we mentioned before, tsenla tembe che juk de shing. If you think about it, practices like just sitting and reciting the names of former Buddhas is easy. You know, it's not like you have to, what do you call it? Control yourself. You just recite holy names, okay? This is the easiest type of power number four. Deishin, tamba gome chakso shin. In the custom of our immediate lineage, the holy lamas of our own personal lineage, which our lineage is extensive. Our lineage goes back unbroken 2,500 years. We can recite, and we do recite, right, twice a month, the names back at least to India. You are in an unbroken, pure lineage which has gone on for 2,500 years, okay? In that lineage, it was always a custom that when you wanted to purify a negative deed that you did in the past, you could prostrate at the same time. So prostration combined with, for example, reciting the names of the Buddhas is a powerful way of purifying things. So it was a custom to combine the two. So you are bowing down to the Buddhas as you recite their names, and you are dedicating it to purifying certain bad deeds. I gave you a reading which I translated from several sources. We'll go through it tomorrow. But we're going to be going through the practice of the 35 Buddhas. They are there in that poster, by the way, upper left. There's a big circle in the upper left. There's 35 little guys there. And Jetsun Kapa had a vision of these 35 Buddhas. So it's very important in our lineage to recite the names of the 35 Buddhas. And each one has a special power for certain kinds of bad deeds, okay? So we'll get into that tomorrow. Tungshat, but you can prostrate physically while you are reciting the prostrations, okay? It also makes you buff and keeps you slim. Tungshat, Rinpoche did it a lot. Anyway, he had a special board made and, you know, maybe you saw it, right? Yeah. Tungshat, Chakta, or Rangche, okay? So you recite that. That's actually a selection from a sutra, Vinaya, an old sutra of the Vinaya, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. We'll go through that tomorrow. It's a very wonderful practice, and I think it'd be useful to focus on it for maybe a couple weeks or months, and you could try it, you know, and see if it gives you a breakthrough that you haven't had yet, like. What prevents you when you get to a certain meditation level and you level out is some kind of subtle karmic block.
And I was thinking that this particular practice, which was one of Jetsun Karpa's favorites, could break through that last veil or something, like take you off the stop the plateau and keep you peeking, you know, in your meditations. So I was, if you have time and if you have desire, I thought you could use this practice. And we'll talk more about how to do that tomorrow, okay? All right then. Are you ready, Grandpa? Other Grandpa? I'm number one. You're number one Grandpa. I'm number two Grandpa. Okay. Shibuki Chukshimeto Tahri Rablishi Nindege Ari guys have to sleep early, okay? And be sure to do your practice in the morning, meditation and especially yoga, because otherwise it'll be so tiring, right, the whole weekend. So you got to take care of yourselves, okay? Eat well, and eat well, okay? You guys too, you have to do your practice tomorrow morning. Otherwise it doesn't sink into your head. Okay, so everyone, please come for meditation and yoga in the morning, okay? All right, good night.